Howie Rose, Susan Waldman with you on The Fan until 1 o'clock this afternoon. Kim Jones is going to join us at 11, Jim Maloney at 12:30. We'll take your calls along the way, I promise, at 877-337-6666. Right now, we are joined by the New York Mets Director of Amateur Scouting, Mark Tremuta. Mark, first off, thanks for joining us, but my immediate question is just with regards to how unique this year's draft is, because this has just been 5 rounds, so you've got a lot of people right now out there who were draft eligible and likely to have been drafted somewhere along the line who essentially now are free agents. So even though the draft is over, is your work maybe just beginning?
Well, first off, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I wanted to tell you, Howie, Susan, that I texted with Al Leiter after he got off the phone with you guys, and I said, how am I supposed to follow Al Leiter and Mark Messier? So, but I appreciate you having me. Yeah, I've already been on the phone with a couple of players that were passed over. All our area scouts and cross checkers are on the phones right now, trying to sell this great organization to those players, and hopefully we can sign some of those and get them into our organization, just like the 5 or 6 players that we took in this year's draft.
They have until.
So that means that the people that, you know, didn't get drafted and stuff, they're ostensibly free agents, and teams can sign them, because people's careers are over before they even started with the 5 rounds of the draft and not what it always was.
Correct. These players are eligible to sign with any club. So essentially, you're almost recruiting them to come and sign with the New York Mets. So that's what we're doing right now, is making phone calls. We're telling them about the organization, what we think we can do for them to get them to the big leagues as quickly as possible, and talk about what type of plans we would have set up for them should they sign with us. So that's what we're doing all morning and all afternoon today and in the coming days.
Well, let's talk about some of the Mets selections, beginning with your very first one, Pete Crow Armstrong. All you had to do was hear this kid speak for 30 seconds, and you could tell he's got the personality to play in this town. Did that factor into it at all, a guy who appears impervious to the challenges that New York might present?
Absolutely. The two of you know as well as anybody how difficult it can be to play in New York. And when we're evaluating players, obviously talent comes first, but the next most important, it might even be more important at times than the talent itself, is the makeup of the player. When we took, just an example, I know Pete Alonso would actually talk to Pete Crow Armstrong after the draft, I believe. And, you know, it's one of those things, you look at Pete Alonso and how he commands the clubhouse now. And I think that's the type of young man Pete Crow Armstrong will be. I think the New York City, I think the Mets fans will love this kid. He's very, very mature. I saw a quote the other day from ex-big leaguer Sean Casey, who had coached Pete in one of the major showcase events in the summer. And Sean said how well he thought that Pete was set up for pro ball in terms of how his thought process, his makeup, the determination and grit, and the kid's such a grinder. And he thought all of his traits and characteristics would be really, really set up well for the grind that it is of minor league baseball and then getting and staying in the big leagues and playing at a high level. So yes, to answer your question, that was a big part of especially taking somebody that high in the draft, that you have to really nail down the makeup, and we really feel this kid has that.
Hey, Mark, and to just go on for that a little bit more, I had heard, and everybody has to, compare everybody to everybody. And I'd heard as a center fielder could play now, maybe a Brett Gardner type, leadoff kind of hitter. But just listening to him, he seems to know who he is. He seems to know what he can do and he can't do. And it sounded to me like he's really set with that. How much does that, you know, he didn't say, I'm going to come right there and I'm going to be the starting center fielder. He knows what he has to do, but I think the defense is what he's very positive about what he can do, also knows what he can't.
Yeah, I think, and Pete's somebody who's been on the radar screen since he was probably 12 years old. He competed with the elite programs like Team USA since that time. He's been around other really good players. He comes from a high school program that has numerous big leaguers, and Lucas Giolito, Max Fried, Jack Flaherty with the Cardinals. And so he has an understanding, I think, of what it takes to play in the big leagues from that perspective, because guys that are just a few years older, come from that school, other players that he's played with in Team USA. I think he does have an understanding. And anytime you have that when you first step onto a professional baseball diamond, those are the kind of things that help you along the way. So yes, absolutely. He has a very good understanding of that.
Now, there's always projection that you have to do in a draft, particularly with high school kids, but what complicates it sometimes is how you think and hope that a player will recover from a serious injury. Now, with a 52nd pick, you were able to get a right-handed pitcher out of Mississippi State by the name of J.T. Ginn, who had Tommy John surgery just a couple of months ago. So let me ask you, even though he went 52nd, where did you have him sort of slotted in before the Tommy John, and what makes you confident that he'll be able to get through the surgery without any major complications?
Right. J.T. was a player that we had a high level of interest in high school. He was one of the best right-handed pitchers, high school pitchers in the country at that time. He went in the first round, late in the first round, to the Dodgers, so we didn't get a crack at him. And we just felt that this was a guy that had so much talent. Had he been fully healthy this year, if you take a look at what he did as a freshman in the SEC, he had an absolutely outstanding year his freshman year. And if he was healthy this year, we fully believe that he would have been taken in the first round by somebody. Maybe, you know, it could have been, who knows, it could have been us or whatever, but he has that type of talent. And to get him in the second round, we just felt was too good to pass up. We consulted with our doctors, Beamer Carr and Dr. Elchek, and they spoke with the surgeon that did JT's surgery, and we feel that he is going to come back to it, you know, by full strength by the early to middle of next year. But, you know, talking about talent, he was just too good to pass up. And again, he's another kid whose makeup we love.
You know, the thing that's interesting about that is a thing drafting kids who either are going to have Tommy John or have had it. Yankees have done that a lot. I know Andrew Brackmann, that one didn't work out, but Clark Schmidt is going to work out. And, you know, you see the difference, and that is, you know, people drop because of that. Guys that have a top 10 pick, they don't want to take a chance, but down below you can get some really good value. And I think that's the way that that teams are going, Mark, and we've seen it before. And I just gave you two examples of the Yankees doing it.
Yeah, recent ones other than that, besides Eric Fetty with the Nationals, was another kid that had it during his season. I believe, you know, again, in talking to the doctors, we trust our doctors, and the success rate of pitchers coming back from Tommy John is high. So, you know, we feel like that was just a risk worth taking. And I think anytime the draft at times is risk reward, and JT's talent we just felt was too good to pass up.
We're talking to Mets Director of Amateur Scouting, Mark Tremuta. And among the six picks that you had, there were only five rounds, but you had a compensation pick for Zach Wheeler's defection to the Philadelphia Phillies as a free agent. And of those six players, you took four college players. The only other high school kid was an outfielder, and again from California, named Isaiah Green. Tell us about him, and is it more challenging in this season of inactivity to project a high school kid because they're losing a valuable year of development?
Well, with regards to him and Pete Crow, we always talk about how this isn't a four-month draft or a five-month draft, meaning from February to June. It's a 12-month draft, and even longer sometimes, in the sense that you're building history with these players. So we've seen Pete Crow Armstrong. We've seen Isaiah Green last year with Wood Bats in the area code games, other showcase events. So we've built a level of history with them, and we've logged at bats and we've logged games with them. So they fortunately, being in a warm weather state, they played early on in February. I saw Pete Crow Armstrong three times. I saw Isaiah Green two times. We had multiple looks with other cross checkers, and our area scouts did a great job with each player. So there was a level of comfort there in taking both of those players, because we did have recent looks, but we also had plenty of looks, you know, in the past and last summer. So we were comfortable taking that, where, yes, some of the players this year did not have a chance to play, so you had to weigh that and how much you wanted to raise them up your board. But we had enough history and were very comfortable with both high school players.
Where are these kids going to go? I mean, are they going to, you know, I know that there's going to be like taxi squads in, you know, within 100 miles. Maybe they'll play in Brooklyn. Maybe there'll be a taxi squad there. Are these kids going to get to play some baseball this summer?
That, I don't know that. I don't have a definitive answer for that yet. I think that's more of a question, and it's a good question for Brody or Jared Banner, our player development director. That's a little bit of an unknown right now. I don't know, again, with the COVID stuff, how that's going to work out, if there's going to be an instructional league or fall leagues, if there's going to be an expansion of that. I think all of that stuff is, they're still sifting and sorting through all of that stuff. But yeah, it's so unusual when you know, you're so excited to take these guys and you want to go live and die with those box scores during the summertime and watch them play every day, and you don't have that rush this year. So it's certainly unusual, but I think those decisions are something that'll be made in the coming weeks.
You know, there's another interesting story among the six kids you drafted. One of them is a right-handed pitcher out of the University of New Orleans named Eric Orsi, who's a 22-year-old. He had a great strikeout-to-walk ratio this year before COVID put a stop to baseball. But the story with this kid is that he survived cancer twice and sat out part of two seasons ago, missed all of last year. He beat testicular cancer. He beat skin cancer. When you assess players from, I know everybody looks at players psychologically now. They do profiling and stuff. How much of that and his ability to get through that factored into the selection?
Just an incredible story. This young man is obviously not ever given up on anything. He could have probably given up baseball, and he missed a year and he came back even stronger. I can't speak highly enough about his makeup, and that's going to be something that I think, him having gone through that, obviously, I mean, what, that's just a terrible situation that he overcame, and I think that's going to help him so much going forward in the terms of, you know, what he's had to overcome. Just an incredible story. We definitely like the arm. He was 90 to 94 with a split that we think can compete at the major league level. He was a guy, actually, that our area scout was the only one that saw him, Jet Butler, who happens to be a former minor leaguer in our system a few years back. And then we watched video on him and just saw how the split finger played. And one of our senior advisors, Rudy Terrasas, who had been a scouting director here back about 10, 15 years ago, mentioned to me, hey, I really like this split finger. So I got in the video and watched him, and Jet Butler was pushing him, and it was just a player that we thought may have a future role as a good reliever, maybe a starter, but maybe as a reliever using that split finger fastball. But again, just tremendous story, tremendous makeup from the kid.
You know, it's interesting, and Mark, looking at your whole career, and people that don't know, amateur scouting guys are just on the road all the time, and, you know, if they ever show up in the press room, that's who you want to sit with because they know who's coming. You know what, I always wanted to ask you, were you with Toronto when they found Stroman and Sanchez and Syndergaard?
Yes, I was. Tommy Tanis, who's our senior advisor to scouting, who was the scouting director before me, Tommy and I were national cross-checkers at that time in 2010 for Syndergaard and Sanchez, and then I believe it was 12 for Marcus Stroman. So yeah, it's, you know, to be here with the Mets, Tommy brought me here in 2013, and now to look up, it makes me feel very proud to look at all the players that I had a small part in drafting, and with Tommy too, and, you know, Syndergaard and Stroman, and all the homegrown players with Conforto and Alonso and McNeil and Dom Smith. So it's very gratifying, I think, for all of us to share in that when we look at some of the accomplishments that the department has had.
You know what I wonder, too, is we hear so much about the possibility that there are going to be fewer minor league affiliates than we've had before, with the fact that it looks like, and I don't know that this is going to be 100% certain, but that there will be a lopping off of a certain number of affiliates for each club in minor league baseball. What is that going to do to your ability to scout players when there are fewer teams for kids to be able to play with as they develop at the professional level?
Yeah, I think, again, that's you know, I've heard and read rumors of that. I think that's something more that Brody and Jared Banner can answer, but certainly that will have to be taken into consideration in subsequent drafts. So I don't know how that's going to play out in terms of, I just only read probably what all you guys have read, and I think that's something that they're still in discussions about. So I think if that does happen, obviously it will change a little bit in how you proceed as a scouting department. But again, we have plans, just like this year when the COVID happened, we developed plans and processes for how we were going to do this. If that's something that happens, then we'll pivot and make adjustments to how we function as a scouting department.
And Mark, and we're talking to Mark Tremuda, of the head of amateur scouting for the Mets. You know, I've always, you know, my partner John Sterling always says that baseball is different from the other sports. And I've always wondered about amateur scouts when they find a kid. How do you project? Because it's not, you know, people don't grow the same. They don't develop the same. Sometimes they mentally can't do it. Baseball, I would think, is the hardest sport of all to project. You know, I'm not talking about Carlos Correa or a first round pick, because unless something happens, they're going to be fine. But how do you project someone that's 17 or 18? Are they going to develop? I hear things, well, you know, if he puts on a little weight, well, how do you know he's going to do that? And if he does that, what happens to this aspect of his game? How hard is it to do that and project down the road for all this time?
I think no matter how much experience you have in this, every day is a new day, and it is different than every other sport. I mean, one of the most important pieces of baseball is the bat. And we're the only sport where you're using a different type of equipment when you're as an amateur as when you sign professional baseball, meaning the aluminum bat to the wood bat. So that's very difficult that's why in the summertime is so important, and we're losing that unfortunately this year, that we get to see college players in the Cape, and we get to see high school players in the showcase events in the summer, to see them with wood bats. And yeah, it can be. Plus, most of the time when you're going to watch a high school player, you're not seeing them as hitter, seeing them face guys throwing 95, 96 with plus breaking balls. So essentially what you're trying to do is you're basing it off athleticism, and you're trying to match, let's say, movement patterns that are similar to major league players. And, you know, we like to think of ourselves, our staff is very good at the technical aspect of scouting, where you're looking and breaking down swings. You're looking at deliveries and arm actions of pitchers and so on. You're looking at body types and how, you know, maybe how the width of their back and how their muscles are defined at the time. And these kids, the one thing these kids can do nowadays is they get bigger and stronger. There's so much advancement and performance coaching and all the things like that we have in our organization. But yeah, it is very difficult because you're not seeing them. Whereas if you're for the NFL draft, you're seeing them against the best players in the country all the time, and they're going right to the NFL. With us, you know, it's going to be a 3 or 4 year journey, and they're not playing against the same exact talent that they will when they're drafted.
And Mark, there's one other element to it as well, and we touched on it very briefly earlier in this conversation, but I can remember Joe McElvain telling me well over 30 years ago that when the Mets were drafting, they had certain tools that they used psychologically. They call it psychological profiling back then, to get a better handle on how a kid might adapt to professional life and whether it would impact on whether or not he's selected. What specifically do you do along those lines to give you a better handle on what makes a given player tick?
We do use something like that that Joe's speaking about now. I think most teams do a psychological test or a personality test, and so to speak. But we really rely heavily on our area scouts to get in those homes as soon as possible when they identify a player, maybe 12 months before, 18 months before, and then start a history log of that as they get in to meet the player and the parents. You know, we use all of the contacts. You know, Tommy Tanis and myself have been scouting for 25 years, so we've built a database of contacts that we can go to. We're very tied in pretty well to the Cape Cod League. I know a lot of the Team USA coaches. We have other coaches on the national level travel ball clubs. So you're trying to use as many sources as you can, because sometimes, you know, you get the high school coach, and of course that high school coach, and I don't mean this in a negative way, is going to speak very, very highly about his player, as many coaches will do, and that's okay. And so we want to try to get as many sources as we can, so that when Brody or Omar or Allard Baird says, hey, what do you have on this kid's makeup, that it's just not one source. And I think that's the most difficult thing sometimes to get a handle on, because a lot of the colleges, it's difficult to get in and actually where they give you tons of access to the player. And when you have 30 teams trying to call the same player, that can be, it's a little overloaded sometimes. So you've got to be able to have contacts other than that specific coach or program, college program. And you just have to try to get as many sources as you can and get as much detail as you can with the players.
You know, it's kind of interesting. I love hearing you talk about this because it's almost like you do it like the old-fashioned way, the way, you know, scouts used to do forever, the way Herbie Stein did it and way, way back, and Joe DeCarlo and all those guys in the New York area scouts. But it's good to hear that. How does the metrics play into any of this when you're scouting? I would imagine you couldn't do it with a high school kid, right?
Well, the metric, I'm a stat nerd. I love numbers. I think I'm old school and new school.
Okay.
So I just love numbers. I think that they play obviously a prominent part in today's game, but you can never lose sight of what a scout sees. And experience and having a database of all the players that I've seen over the years or somebody that's done it for a long time. But I love that. I think it's important to evolve as a scout as the game evolves. So you can't, if Major League Baseball is evolving, you can't have your scouting department not doing the same thing. So we're all trying to gain an edge, whether it be in how we break down players. We use a lot more video than we did when I started in 1997. We've used a lot more of the analytics. You know, you guys know Paul DePodesta that was here before in the Moneyball book. And I learned a lot from him in that regard. So we do use them. We have guys that read all the, you know, if you've heard the word TrackMan, all that data. And we have Adam Guttridge, who's our head analyst that's in charge of analytics. So all of that has to play a part. Anything you do in life, if you're going to buy a house and you're making a big purchase, why would you not want to have all of the data present to make the very best decision? And that's all I'm concerned with, is making the best decision possible for the New York Mets. And I have to, I'm not doing my due diligence if I don't use all of the data, but I'm still a scout at heart. But I understand that when it comes down to making selections and lining up our board, that I'm going to use all the information available to me.
Well, Mark, thanks so much for joining us. This has been very, very enjoyable and informative, and hopefully every one of these kids that you picked will turn out to be big leaguers and hopefully some stars in there too. Thanks so much.
Well, I appreciate it, Howie. Susan, you guys be safe, and thank you very much for on behalf of our entire scouting department for giving me a chance to speak today. I really appreciate it.
And by the way, you don't have to worry about following anyway. I just texted Alan Beard and told him that you were flat out terrific.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Hope to talk to you again in the future.
Thank you. Mark. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
You got it, Mark. Thank you. Well, that was fun.
It was. No, see, that I love talking
to
scouts.
Different.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, when you hear and read assessments of players that just about no one else has heard of, And that's really the way it is in baseball when, you know, it's not like football and basketball, as he was saying, when largely those kids go directly to the pros. You know, here, there's a lot of projection to be done. And when you talk to scouts, and I think we talked about this last time, Susan, nobody was better for me to talk to than Gene Michael, who gave me so much information on kids coming up through the Mets system. But, you know, you said it. Those are the ones you want to sit with in the press room.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I thought of that. So I looked that up. Can you imagine this guy when he was back with Toronto. I mean, Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez and Noah Syndergaard, you're in on that with the Toronto Blue Jays. They'd be, you know, kind of got good taste, I think.
So there's something Met fans, I suppose, should be excited about based on projections, right?
Yep, based on projections. All right, we will be back on the other side of the update with Kim Jones. We're going to switch gears, and the NFL is actually preparing to play and a few other things. So Howie Rose, Susan Waldman here on The Fan. We'll be here till 1 o'clock, and we'll be back after these messages and the update.